Turn your Bibles up to Genesis 25. I'm going to spend most of this study looking in that area of Scripture. We're looking through the study of Genesis. We're making some timely efforts to pull some of those Bible classes out and spend a little bit more emphasis on some of the things that we've been learning. Today we're going to do that very thing, speaking about Jacob. Looking, not necessarily maybe a character study, but just looking at some of the things we have learned and we have seen through him. Before I do that, so we'll make a quick announcement, wonderful announcement for us. Many of you have met David Johnston that's been visiting with us for a couple of months now. He met with us last week and wants to be a part of the church here at 4th Street and identify with us, and we're just tickled to death about that. Next week, Lord willing, in the bulletin, we'll have his contact information for you, so you'll be able to add that to your directory. He's in room 324 in the Folsom Center, and recently, not too awful long ago, the Folsom Center reopened themselves up to visitors. So it is possible to go and visit with him, and I know it would be a wonderful thing for him. And he wanted me to pass on the message that he's so excited to be welcomed here and to be a part of the group here, and we're certainly the pleasure is mine. I've enjoyed getting to know him so well, and if you haven't met him yet, take advantage of that. We're glad to have him be a part of us. We're studying today about Jacob. Jacob's a really unique character. It's a unique study. But the two events that would probably most readily come to your mind is that dream he had. We had the ladder. Had those angels going up and down on that ladder. And then that night he spent before meeting Esau wrestling with what he thought was a man that ended up turning out being God in the form of man. And those two stories are in a unique life, they stick out. But what I want us to see is that can we take those two events and kind of see how they fit into his life? That we're going to spend most of our time, I guess, maybe looking at that so-called wrestling match. But before we do, before we talk about him fighting with God, wrestling with God, he's fighting with everybody. Let's just real quickly, today's not necessarily a character study. We're just looking at some things we could see from Jacob's life. But just, Jacob was fighting in the womb. I haven't been born yet. Are you with me? In chapter 25, verse 22, when Rebecca conceived, and in verse 22 it says, the children struggled together with in her. That word struggle, when you do a word study on that, don't picture in your mind, hey honey, come touch my stomach, the baby's moving, the baby's kicking. No, that's not what that word struggle is talking about. Go do a study on that. There is something beyond the norm going on here. And I don't know what that would have felt like to Rebecca, but it was to the point where God came and explained something to her. He's not even born yet, and he's already fighting somebody. He struggled with his parents. You're dropped down to verse 28. Isaac loved Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, I guess in every family dynamic, that somebody at some point is going to think favoritism is being shown somewhere. No, this is the real deal. This is not a kid not getting their way, and they're claiming, oh, you like so-and-so better. Well, this is documented by the Holy Spirit. This was real. This is not figments of imaginations. The deception and the struggle goes beyond that. We won't turn to chapter 27, but you'll remember, you know, when the deal with the birthright happened, and the lengths that Rebekah and Jacob went to deceive Isaac, her husband, and Isaac, his father. You know, all the stuff about the hair and all the stuff about the garments. And twice the question was asked, are you Esau? You know, Isaac in his blindness still able to discern. Now, this is some, you feel like him, you smell like him, but well, you talk like Jacob. Are you Esau? Twice he point blank asked, and twice he was point blank lied to. Ty pointed this out to me after the class was over. I didn't bring this up to my class. I didn't think about it. But When the belly stuff was going on, when that struggling was going on, and God comes to describe that to her, God told her, the younger's gonna rule. The older's gonna serve the younger. God had told her what was gonna happen. And now they're going to all this just lies and deceptions, and did she not trust God? Does that not get handed down to Jacob? Why is he wrestling with God? He was wrestling with God a long time before that night when he's coming back to Canaan. He's been fighting with everybody. Before he was born, he's fighting. He's struggling with his parents. After he was born, they're resting in the womb. Now after he's born, there's this struggle. Look in verse 30. Esau said to Jacob, feed me. He'd been out working all day. He's an outdoorsman, and he is legitimately parched. And I need some food, brother. I am faint. And Jacob said, sell me this day your birthright. Now, I am not in any way trying to defend Esau. The New Testament takes this event and calls him a profane man. He couldn't see beyond the nose on his face. He traded something with lifelong value for one meal. I'm not taking his side. But Jacob, come on. Feed your brother. Feed your brother. Are you kidding me? Struggled with his in-laws. Because of what he did with Esau and the deception, Esau is ready to kill him. He is going to kill him. He is getting a plan formed to kill him. Mom and daddy send Jacob off. For his own life, they send him off. He's gone 20 years. While he's there, he meets this woman. He's enamored by her and meets their family. And his father-in-law, Laban. At that point, Jacob was, you remember, 77. And it seems to be, maybe for the first time in his life, he meets somebody a little trickier than him. He's been the one pulling the tricks. He's been the one working strings. And now he meets somebody who cons him like he's never been conned before. And now he has found himself married to someone he didn't want to be married for. Now there's another 7-year cycle where he has to... So he's got the struggle going on with that. After the 14 years, he then worked 6 years longer, but he's building up his own estate, so to speak. He's no longer working in the indentured servitude for the wives. Now he's working for himself. And because he manipulated the fields and manipulated the animals and herds, he's just bigger than all of them. And so his brother-in-laws go to the father-in-law complaining about that. And we're losing our inheritance. He's taking over everything. He's not getting along well with daddy-in-law. He's not getting well with brother-in-law. It's so bad. Do you remember how when God told him to go back to Canaan? You remember how he had to do it? He had to sneak off like a runaway slave. While the family is out in the fields taking care of the animals, they sneak off like rats. Hey, while they're not looking, let's go. He didn't get along with his own parents very well. He didn't get along with his own brother. He didn't get along with his brother-in-law. He didn't get along with his in-laws. Who's left? From the second day he's a married man. There's the wedding day, and then the second day occurs. And from then on, there's this conflict. There's this war going on in his own family. He has two wives. They are sisters. They are jealous as all get out from one another. And there's this competition between them. From that, they start handing out handmaids, and there's babies born. You know, it just seemed like clockwork. Year after year, there's another baby born. Ends up with 12 of them. And then he struggles with those children. Just today, you know, I prepped the class before we began. You're not going to hear anything good today. You've got two sons. You know, you can't butter it down. They became murderers. You've got a son that took a servant, a midwife, had no authority and power of her own, and just took her. You've got another son. Lay with a prostitute. He thought it was. And then was going to kill her for doing the same thing he had done before he was shown, before the light was put in the improper place. And a lot of bad things going on with his sons. Well, that's just a taste of it. It's not all. We're going to see some other bad things they're going to do this Wednesday night. If you haven't been coming to class, hey, it's a good time to join in. We'll find out another evil thing those sons decide to do. And so I just pause and ask the question. Are you surprised when we get to chapter 32 that he's wrestling with God? Who in the world's in his life that he hadn't wrestled with? Are you surprised? Are we shocked that he's struggling with God? Who has he not been in conflict with? Fighting with God is just the culmination of it all. As a matter of fact, all of this stuff, everything that he has been in struggle with, that all goes back to not trusting fully in God. His mother was told the older's going to serve the younger. And yet they didn't trust enough to let God do what he does in his time. They work up that scheme and they do their own thing. He's been fighting with somebody all of his life. And now we go. Turn to chapter 32 and let's slow down a little bit. But you kind of give this again. I'm not going to call this a character study as much. But here's a real, that was a real quick 10-minute overview of what had happened with him. And then he snuck off while Laban was out in the field. Where he's driving, he's going with a pretty big caravan. Laban and the brothers catch up with them. They have it out again. But they do patch everything up. And they I guess you'd say they're in good graces when they part for the last time. And then Jacob keeps making his way. It would have been a long trip. Would have been several months. And word passes and spreads that he's coming home. Word comes that Esau knows. And so when we're looking in chapter 32, the scene of that event is Esau's coming. And Jacob has still got 20 years of maybe guilt, 20 years of a bad conscience, 20 years of knowing what he did and how underhanded it was. And the last thing he knew, I got to get out of town so my brother doesn't kill me. And for all he knows, Esau still feels that way. So you remember that big buffer zone? You know, he got the servants and he got the animals and he put his wives in a particular order. And that's in verse 23. He took them and he sent them over the brook and sent over everything that he had. So he puts everything in front of him. He's at the end of the line. They're all across. And now it's just him. So he's alone. As a matter of fact, that's the next verse. Jacob was left alone. You know, he's in solitude. It's quiet. It's dark. And you know what your mind can do when you're anxious? Those nights when sleep just is not coming. And everything's rolling through your mind. And he's alone. And he's worried. And he's stressed. That's the scene. And then verse 24. It says, a man wrestled with him unto the breaking of day. First of all, a couple things out of that sentence. First of all, don't try to water down what wrestle means. It means exactly what we think it means. It means exactly what it means now. Don't think this was a dream. Don't think this was just some vision. Because if that's true, then we've got some problems. Because we know, we've already studied this, so I'm not spilling the beans. God, this is where Jacob gets blessed for the first time by God. This is the first time the blessings are given to him by God. Was that a dream? If the wrestling's not real, was the blessings real? Jacob, as you know, is going to end up limping the rest of his life. Oh, was that limp just, was that a figment of imagination? No, this is real. This happened. Wrestle means wrestle. And man means man. That's all Jacob thought that it was. Now we know who it was. And Jacob finds out who it was before it's all said and done. But when the man showed up, it's just a man to him. Do you remember an example? Do you remember the day that Jesus resurrected that Shane just read about for us and took our mind back to? There were two men walking from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and this man joined into them. They had no idea who he was. These were disciples. They knew who Jesus was, but they didn't know who he was that day. It was the Lord, but they didn't know that. That's a picture that here. A man shows up, and that's just, it's really interesting that it's silent on how this thing got started. Can you picture in your mind how this thing got started? You're Jacob. Maybe you got a fire going, maybe you don't, but this stranger just walks into your camp, and before you know it, you're on the ground with him. How did it start? Did he say something? Did he pop off? Did he smart mouth? Fight start in a lot of different ways. We have no idea how this thing started. But it starts. And it just keeps going. And it keeps going. And Jacob, pretty familiar with struggling. Jacob familiar with, maybe when he thought it was just a man, maybe he felt up to the task. Maybe he's... There's people in this room in a physical situation could handle yourself very, very well. Maybe Jacob was one of those men. But it's on. And it goes on for a while. And then grace is shown. In saying that maybe Jacob could have took care of himself, I don't want you to think that he fought with God all night long because he's so good at jiu-jitsu. Or he's a black belt in taekwondo. No. As you well know, God ends up just when God's finally done with this. Okay, the point has been made. The lesson has been taught. And the lesson was dependence. The lesson is, Jacob, you came through all smelling like a rose and all this other stuff. But this is a fight you're not going to win on your own. There are things you can't do on your own. And I'm going to teach you that. I'm going to show you that through sweat and through pain. And when the lesson was sufficiently taught, a finger on his hip. Apparently the hip pops out of place or whatever it does, but he's now incapacitated. Don't think they fought all night long because Jacob was just a man's man. God, 2 seconds into this thing, could have popped his hip out. No, there is a lesson being taught here. And in verse 26, again, at some point in the middle of this fight, we don't know when, there's a lot that's not told about it, but here's what we know. At some point, that man shows up, and that's all Jacob sees him as. At some point, they start wrestling. And that match goes on. But at some point, Jacob comes to a conclusion of who it is. Because in verse 26, he says, I'm not letting you go unless you bless me. He understands. At some point, somehow, some way, he knows. Just like on the road to Emmaus, those two men, while they were sitting to the meal, says their eyes were open. And they saw who the prior couldn't see. I'm not letting you go. I need a blessing from you. In verse 28, as you well know, there was the name change. Your name will not be Jacob anymore. Your name will be Israel, for he's a prince. And the power of God is with you. So there's this name change, this symbolic name change, representing a change in character. In verse 31, after that touching of the hip, it says he halted on his thigh. Evidently, if I understand that right, he limped the rest of his life. He goes forward with this so-called battle wound, you might want to say. A real quick application for us. Or a lot of the things that we struggle with, a lot of our struggles, a lot of our thorns, they leave us scarred. There are consequences that we carry with us. Doesn't mean we were not blessed. There are things, our past sins. We talked about sin last week. We talked about guilt last week. There are consequences of that are long going, if not lifelong going. It doesn't mean we're not blessed. Jacob went away blessed. He went away with a new name. But there was a wound, and he carried that with him. But the whole point of this thing, it's just about trust. Look in chapter 33. His whole life was a struggle, as we reminded ourselves of. He never seems to have trusted anybody. That included God. But that wrestling match that night, like the line of demarcation, he's different. after that. The first day of a new life, because when all this was done, after meeting with Esau and realizing that the hatred was gone and the animosity was gone, the hug and the reunion and the tears, when all that was done, look in chapter 33, verse 19. He bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, 100 pieces of silver. And he erected there an altar, and he called it God, the God of Israel. God, the God of Israel. When you read that, what do you think? Do you think he's talking about the nation to be? No, the nation hasn't come yet. There are three promises that we are seeing and working to see the fulfillment of. But we are 0 for 3 so far in our study. We're up to chapter 38. We are 0 for 3. We hadn't seen the nation. We hadn't seen the land. We certainly haven't seen the seed. This is not talking about Israel, the nation. This is Israel, the man. Back in chapter 32, he said, your name is not Jacob anymore. Your name is Israel. What Israel is saying is, you are my God. And our answer to that is, well, it's about time. He's now, what, pushing 100 years old. And he finally acknowledges, you are the God of Israel. You are my God. That not changed him. That event changed him. Just an incredible thing. He's broken, he's named, he's blessed. And those same things can happen to us. Let our sin break us. Because there's a wonderful name we can go by. Taking on the name of Christ. Wonderful blessings found only for those who wear that name. But that's that event. Go back to chapter 28 now. Go back to 28. Let's talk about that other attention-getting event. This was as he was making his way to the Ur of the Chaldees when he was running from Esau. The wrestling match happened about to meet Esau. This one is as he was running from him. And if you'll remember, in verse 12, he's been long day. That's a long trip. And at the end of one of those long days of putting the miles behind you, worn out, lays down, trying to rest. And he had this dream in verse 12. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God ascending and descending. That's all the dream was. That's all he had to go on. A ladder that at the bottom touched earth, at the top touched heaven, and it's simply called a ladder. And in the dream, it's kind of picture this escalator thing. If you're looking at it from a distance, you see the excavator and got people coming down. On the other side, you got people coming up. Well, that's what's going on the ladder. You got these descending and ascending angels. That was the vision. That's all we had to go by. Turn to John 1. John 1. Like a lot of things that we're seeing in Genesis, we go to the New Testament and we can add to that. We could do that this morning. In our study, as horrible as that story was of what Judah did to Tamar, you go to Matthew chapter 1, that long genealogy from Abraham to Jesus. And there it is. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Perez through Tamar. Or Judah, rather. Jacob begat Judah. Judah begat Perez through Tamar. She has her name. There are very few women listed in the genealogy. It basically just went through the husbands, the dads. Tamar's there. God took an evil event and something good came from it. Sounds a lot like the cross, huh? God can do good things when it helps His will. In John chapter 1, as Jesus is beginning to show himself, announce himself, as he is selecting those that would first be disciples and then later on become apostles. He's talking to Nathanael. There's no guile in you. How do you know that? Because I know. I saw you. And as he's talking to him, pick up in verse 50. Jesus answered and said unto him, because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree. Do you believe that? You'll see greater things than these. Wait a minute. So I blew your mind because I told you I knew you were sitting under a particular type of tree. If that gets you excited, you just need to hang on. You're going to see a lot greater things than that. Verse 51. And he said to him, verily, verily, I say unto you, hereafter you will see heaven open, and you will see the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. In chapter 28 of Genesis, it was just a ladder. Angels are going up and down on something. But Jacob wouldn't have understood what that meant. It's not till here that we get the imagery of it. It's here that we figure out Jesus is the ladder. He's the one that our prayers, just to put a real quick application on it, our prayers going up, ascending to heaven because he intercedes for us. Blessings coming down from heaven to God's people. Jesus is the connecting force. He's why we can talk to God. He's why fellowship was renewed. He's what can rejoined us into a family, father, son, father, daughter relationship. Jesus is that. Does it make that vision a little bit more powerful? Does it make that event in Jacob's life maybe a little bit more special to us? You know, he had some weak moments. And we have seen, there were times when his sin caught up with him. Boy, did his sin catch up with him. But he finally saw where blessings come. He saw that vision that 20 years later he still probably just thought about on quiet nights. He saw that dream of a ladder going up and down. What in the world? And then 20 years pass and he finally realizes, my problems in life is because I've been fighting God all along. Never really trusted, never really convicted, never really give my life to him, never really put my hopes within him. From now on, he is my God. He's the God of Israel. Finally, he realized where blessings came from. And he's a changed man after that. He's a changed character. Those two events in combination makes him a little bit different. When we see Jacob, and we're not going to see him a whole lot more. Joseph is about to become front and center of the Genesis study. But when we see Jacob, he's much more humble. Much more tender-hearted, much more compassionate. He's different. Well, that change happened literally kicking and screaming. We talk about it was a fight. Yeah, it was with him. But he is different afterward. Turn to Hebrews 11. Again, I told my class this morning, there was just, we're reading the last, I mean, it was like the last two or three weeks. This kind of depressing, isn't it? We've seen some evil stories. We've seen some bad things. And yet we're trying to see how God used all that for good. So let's not forget this. Jacob made it. The weaknesses that he had, the struggles that he had, the downtimes, and he made it. Here he is. Hebrews 11. And it's interesting. Of all the things that could have been said about Jacob, that's an interesting study. If you've got some time and you want to just think and just explore, come to Hebrews 11. Look at the characters that are there. And then just think about why was that the point that was selected. Of all the things Moses did, why was this the one mentioned? Of all the things Joseph did, why was this the one mentioned? Of all the things that happened in Jacob's life, verse 21, by faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped leaning on the top of his staff. Jacob did a lot of things. It was a very long-lived, excitement-filled life. But when the Holy Spirit was making that so-called list of the faithful that we talk about, the roll call of faith, He didn't pick Jacob, the shepherd. He didn't pick Jacob, the fighter. He didn't pick Jacob, the father. He picked Jacob, the old, dying man. It took all those things in his life to get him to be such a man. His life wasn't always smooth, and there was this roller coaster thing he had to deal with. But to his credit, he made it. So let's be thankful for that. And let it remind us that there's too many who lose their faith when tragedy strikes, when the bad strikes, when the things strike and happen that we don't want, whether it be a family issue, a health issue, an economic issue, whatever it might be. Jacob had a lot of ups and downs, bigger tosses and turns than, let's be honest, us. And he made it. He became that dying man considered by the Spirit to be a man of faith. We can too. Whenever that dying man and woman comes for us, we can be faithful. Get your songbooks out. That ladder that he saw in the vision, that in the New Testament lets us know represented Jesus himself. The symbolism of communication. Jesus, God was always there. The vision was letting him know, here's earth, here's you, here I am, and there's this I'm available to you. But Jacob wasn't ready for that. Christ, the ladder, is available to us. If you're not a Christian, His blood is available to you. His sacrifice is available to you. Forgiveness is available to you. Grace and mercy are available to you. A real hope of heaven available to you. Jacob waited 2 decades. Don't make the mistake. We don't know that we've got 2 decades in us. We can look back at him from history. We can't look going forward. We have to act when we know to act. For those of us that are Christians, maybe we've just forgotten where our blessings are coming from. Maybe we've forgotten and we have done something even that hinders that ascending and descending. Prayer's hindered because hands are not clean. Life is unclean. Heart is unclean. But He's available. That was the dream. I'm available to you. And so the question becomes us. The invitation becomes ours. What are we going to do with it? If we can help you, do it while we stand and sing.